If you don't know SiriusXM, then listen up. Commercial-free music, plus sports, comedy, talk, and news. They have it all. And right now, you can get your first 3 months of SiriusXM outside the car for just $1. Go to SiriusXM.com/busted to see offer details and to subscribe. Offer available to new SiriusXM streaming subscribers. SiriusXM, no car required.
This is the Busted Open Podcast. You can listen to the full show Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156.
Welcome to the Busted Open Podcast. This is Dave LaGreca. On today's episode, WWE Hall of Famer Mark Henry and I talk Wrestle Kingdom 14. That's right, this weekend, huge card, two nights at the Tokyo Dome. And one of the big matches is a Texas Death Match. Jon Moxley going up against IWGP United States Champion and our guest, Lance Archer. We talk all about Wrestle Kingdom 14 and that huge match with Jon Moxley and Lance Archer. Also, I gave my top five wrestlers of the decade last week, and number one, AJ Styles. AJ Styles joins us on this edition of the Busted Open Podcast. Mr. Lance Archer. Lance, how are you today?
I'm good, guys. How y'all doing?
Man, I am excited for what's about to take place at Wrestle Kingdom 14. In a I would think that you have the advantage because it's a Texas death match.
Well, absolutely. It's from my home state.
Lance, listen, man. I'm gonna have you in my prayers because you're a Texan. And it's a death match. I'm always afraid of these things. I've watched them. I've never in my career been in a death match. Never.
Yeah.
You know why?
Tell me why.
Because I wanted to live.
Well, that's my plan too. You know.
Well, let's your prayers up for you, man. Prayers up.
I appreciate it.
Well, I mean, just so everyone knows, you can only get victory by knocking out or submitting your opponent. So there really is, you know, no rules, no disqualification rules for this match.
So you don't even have to count. You have to knock them out.
There's no pinfall. Only way to win, like you said, is knockout, submission, or you don't make a 10 count, like a last man standing situation.
Oh, right.
So, I mean, and then Jon Moxley. And before we get into Jon Moxley.
Has he ever been knocked out?
Jon Moxley?
Yeah.
Well, there's a first time for everything.
His wife's a knockout.
This is true. You're right.
Hey.
No, but let's get into your year because, you know, obviously New Year's, you reflect. You had one hell of a 2019. I believe the year of your career, and, you know, we've talked a lot about you here on Busted Open. Before we look ahead to what's about to take place, tell us about your thoughts of the year that was 2019 for you.
Well, I mean, just like you said, even for me, and I've been lucky enough to have a fun career for almost 20 years now, been here with New Japan for 8.5+ years. And this has been the biggest year of my time in New Japan, really in my career. You know, like I said, lucky enough to work at TNA, WWE, and now New Japan Pro Wrestling. And with the rise of New Japan Pro Wrestling and how popular it's gotten and the visibility of it through New Japan World, and we're going to be live on Fight Network or Fight TV as well. All eyes are on Wrestle Kingdom this weekend. And the fact that I had a chance, you know, the circumstances changed things, but I became the U.S. champion back in October, and now I'm the champion. John's the challenger. And going into Wrestle Kingdom, my first singles match in Wrestle Kingdom. This is my sixth time wrestling at Wrestle Kingdom, my fourth time in a title match. All the previous ones were with Davey Boy Smith Jr. and tag title matches, but this is my first singles title match in Wrestle Kingdom, the biggest Wrestle Kingdom they've ever produced with two nights. In 2019, you know, really starting with the New Japan Cup, a lot of people attributed the G1, and I think that's just when people really started watching. But Will Ospreay and I had a really, really, really good match at the New Japan Cup, and that kind of preceded the G1. But then the G1, just because everybody was watching, that is when everybody really started paying attention. And, you know, I just, like I said, the G1 was my time to reinvent myself, restart, you know, reinvigorate myself, and really show the world what I always knew I could do, but really show them in on a platform that they had never seen before. And then, like I said, fast forward the U.S. Championship and now going into 2020 in Wrestle Kingdom tomorrow.
I really thought that you did have the best year of your career as well. I saw you at the Cactus League show. And I could see a different level of confidence in you in California at that show. And what do you give that to? Like, what flipped that switch?
Right. For me, like I said, New Japan's been great for me in my career because it was a place I came and there was really no limitations. There was never a no, don't do that. It was always, that's good, but we need more. We need bigger. We need stronger. We need more monster. I heard that so many times, my early start with New Japan in 2011 and so on. And it's just one of those things that as the years have gone on, I've just continued to kind of bring out new elements and new ideas. And all of that's been accepted and encouraged by New Japan. And then, like I said, with the G1, it was one of those things where I knew at this point in my career, even with New Japan and the loyalty that they have for the guys who have been loyal to them, that this was a moment that I had to make a decision, either be the same guy that they kind of thought they had and just kind of exist and coast and, get things here and there, or take this chance, take this opportunity and do everything I possibly can. And, it was just kind of, I was like, screw it. It's either do or die, adapt or die, and I was not going to die. I was planning on doing everything I could to do more than survive, and it was to become something new even for myself. So, it reinvigorated myself and I think created a confidence that I'd already been gaining but just made it that much more.
I'm really glad that more people that you work with and work for wanted to see more monster, wanted to see more big guy, wanted to see more psychology from you. Because you relied on, and we always talk about the good and the bad with the athletes that come on the show. And I always say athletes because I think that pro wrestlers are the best athletes in the world of any sport. But
no doubt.
I'm biased. and that was one of the things with you that I saw in your career early when, I've known you for a long time. And you were a really, really, and are a really good athlete, and you relied on that athletic ability. And I always hated sometimes when I saw this humongous, unbelievably good-looking guy go up to the top rope and do the flips and flying and stuff. And it's a testament to your athletic ability, but I'm glad that you finally have slowed down and become that monster that we've all wanted to see you be.
Yeah, it took some time, but yeah, absolutely. And like I said, the encouragement that I've gotten here in New Japan has helped that along tremendously.
You and speaking of athletic ability, you were a quarterback. So you obviously had a lot of smarts, being that you have to, that's the position on the field that requires the most intelligence and awareness, if you will. Tell us a little bit about your college football experience. We're also a sports channel.
Absolutely, yeah. That was my passion when I was in high school and even going to my early years in college. It was one of those things that, I remember being in high school and the football field was basically right across the street from my house. And at night there was one light that would shine over the goalpost and I would drag a tire out there and I'd hang it over the goalpost and I'd be out there by myself with like three footballs and throwing it from every angle I could possibly think of. And then I'd go get the balls and I'd go do it again. And I would sit out there for hours because that was my passion. That's what I wanted to do. And, it helped me advance in high school and then things started in college. And unfortunately my university college football days didn't go very well, but I was out there, I was with the teams, I transferred schools once and things like that. Like I said, it was a lot of fun. It was what I wanted to do, but it didn't play out. It wasn't in my stars, it wasn't in my future. And, when I got out of football is when I got into professional wrestling. And, I'd been a fan for many years. I was a big WCW mark, and then I started watching both companies and all the products and everything that was around professional wrestling before I actually started in the business. And funny thing is you bring up the fact that I was a quarterback. When I first tried out for professional wrestling, I only knew what I saw on TV. I knew it was athletic and it was entertaining, and there was, you know, professional athletes who acted and did all those things, but I didn't know how physically demanding professional wrestling was. And I was a quarterback, so I had the red jersey on, and, you know, we didn't get hit in practice. It was pretty easy times. And then I go into professional wrestling, which, again, I don't have any concept of how physically demanding it is, and did my first tryout session and left there in more pain than I'd ever been in all the athletic competitions and sports that I'd ever played in my life. So it's funny, you know, yeah, like you said, I tricked people into thinking I was smart, so I was a quarterback, but then, you know, I got into professional wrestling and realized how physically demanding it was. And luckily, I stuck with it, and it's done okay for me, you know, in the last nearly 20 years, but I didn't think I was going to stick with it initially because it hurt so bad.
You know, Lance, you mentioned that you're no stranger to Wrestle Kingdom. What's it like, you know, especially for the fans in the States that may have never had the opportunity to go to this venue? What's it like wrestling in the Tokyo Dome?
It's amazing, to say the least. I had one opportunity to do one WrestleMania, which was amazing by itself, you know, because only a select few people get to do it. You know, my match at WrestleMania was just a pre-show Battle Royal, and this was pre-network era, so, you know, nobody really saw it except for if you bought the DVDs or whatnot, but it was still a very special moment for me. And to get to wrestle at Wrestle Kingdom, especially, you know, that first one that Smith and I did where we were the tag champs going and defending, you know, that was probably one of the most special moments in my career to date. And, you know, Wrestle Kingdom, for the people who don't understand, you know, Wrestle Kingdom is basically WrestleMania, but with a very strong emphasis on the wrestling aspect. You know, all the matches are pretty much title matches, you know, and that's the focus. You know, who's the champion, who's the challenger, and that's exactly what's going into the fight scenario that's happening in both nights of Wrestle Kingdom. And so I think that's what it is. You get the big show lore of a WrestleMania, but with the sport focus of champions and challengers.
You know, when I look at this matchup with you and Moxley, and by the way, like, I'm totally expecting you to retain your championship tomorrow night.
Well, me too.
And then you'll be involved in night number two as well, because then you would have to go up against
right.
Juice Robinson. I mean, that's pretty tough having to wrestle both nights at Wrestle Kingdom 14.
Yeah, you know, and with Mox and I's match being, you know, a Texas death match and all, we're definitely going to be putting each other through the ringers. But, you know, Juice and Finley have a tag title match. So it's not like he's got night one off and he's coming into night two completely fresh. So he'll probably be beat up some as well. But, yeah, it's going to be an interesting scenario and a lot of fun to be able to wrestle twice in both Wrestle Kingdoms, you know, which is the first time that New Japan's ever done this, to have two nights of Wrestle Kingdom in the Tokyo Dome.
But he's not in a death match.
Yeah, I mean, death match is taking it to another level, Lance.
He's not in the death match, but, you know, we'll see. I'm a tough SOB, and we'll find out what it comes to be when night two comes around.
And you look at these two nights, and obviously everyone's talking about Liger, and this is going to be it for him as far as this his retirement weekend. You and John Moxley, night number one in the Texas Death Match. Jay White and Naito for the IWGP Intercontinental Championship, Ibushi and Okada for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, and then, I mean, we're going to get Tanahashi and Jericho night number two. You need to have this two nights. This is how stacked card is this weekend.
Oh, yeah, and that Chris Jericho got a new stipulation that, you know, I don't think anybody saw coming, that, you know, if Tana beats Chris, he gets a shot at the AEW Championship. So that's, you know, that's a new element to that match that didn't exist before, and now it's there. So, you know, Tana's got a chance to beat him in the Tokyo Dome in Japan and then go on and challenge Chris for that AEW championship.
Well, Ryan McKinnell and myself will be watching. We're going to pull an all-nighter. We're going to
take a nap.
We do radio Saturday morning, and we're going to stay up and watch the whole 4 hours, and hopefully I'll be able to, in the beginning of the show, say, and still, champion Lance Archer.
Well, here, I'll say this, Lance. If they're pulling an all-nighter, knowing Mark and Ryan, they pull an all-nighter, that means the show's starting about 11:30 on Saturday morning instead of 9, because there's no way they are answering the bell to start the show at 9 o'clock in the morning if they're pulling an all-nighter.
Oh, I'm going to get it in. I'm going to bed at like 7:30, 8 o'clock.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, okay.
Yeah, whatever.
I'm gonna play it smart. I'm no damn fool. What's wrong with you? I'm gonna have plenty of snacks.
Them old UT Austin days, staying up all night.
Yeah. You spent a lot of time down there on 6th Street.
I did.
You were down at Texas State, right?
Yep, I was down there at Texas State. The first time I met you was I was working at a club down there. You were just down on 6th Street, and I got to shake your hand and meet you and say hello. It was the first time. Scared to death, but impressed every bit.
Well, I tell you what, man, you have proved that you belong in this business. I'm proud to consider you my peer, and hopefully that you pull this championship off, go into that second night, and hand Juice Robinson his ass.
That's my damn plan. I'm going to take it to him.
All right, Lance Archer, I know you got to get some sleep. It's a big weekend. Also, you mentioned Fight TV. Go to fight.tv. You can get the New Japan Wrestle Kingdom full pack where you get both nights and also New Year's Dash as well. So definitely go to fight.tv for all the information. And it's extremely cheap for this much pro wrestling. And like Mark said, I hope that when we're doing our show next week, we're talking about you retaining that IWGP United States Championship. Again, Lance Archer, friend of the show. Lance, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me on. Y'all have a good day, and I'm gonna get to bed here pretty quick.
All right,
good night.
Thanks.
From Japan. Oyasumi nasai from Japan.
Okay. Thanks.
Bless you.
thanks, Lance. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, guys.
Bye-bye. Mark, first of all, thanks to Lance for coming on because it's very late and he's got a huge weekend. So it's roughly 11:30 at night for him. So for him to join us with the type of weekend he's about to have, we're very appreciative to have the IWGP United States Champion on. And Lance Archer, when we talk about 2019, he's one of my picks for a guy that's in that, you know, top 10 wrestlers of 2019 after the year that he's had, for sure.
Great year. I saw him on the indie scene a couple of times this year, where he is dramatically better. I mean, he was always good, but now it's like the light switch came on. And the psychology in his matches are not based around how much you could do, but how much jeopardy you put the other guy in. And you feel then like it's like a suspense thriller. Like, he has that kind of effect in his matches. I think it's one of the strong suits of wrestling in his repertoire.
Like what you're hearing? Catch Busted Open live Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156 or on demand with the SiriusXM app.
AJ, how are you today?
I'm good, man, but I got to correct you on a couple things. I was never a Ring of Honor champion. And I was in the leader of the Bullet Club. So, sorry to bust your bubble, bud.
All right, so now you fall down to number two on my top five wrestlers of the decade.
I
misspoke. No, you are the number one wrestler of the decade, AJ. And if you look at everything that you did over the last 10 years, and, you know, we talk about Cody Rhodes and him betting on himself. You did the same thing as well, AJ, and you've had a phenomenal career, but this last decade for you has been tremendous.
No, I've been very blessed to be, you know, at TNA at the time and doing what I was doing over there. But then, like you said, bet on yourself and go somewhere else, which was Ring of Honor, and transitioned into New Japan, and then that transitioned into WWE. I mean, if that were my career, that's pretty darn good.
Pretty darn good is an understatement. I think that, you know, we talked about this, you know, long before you rose to the occasion these last 2 years of your career, that in the car you were like, man, I don't just want to be here and, you know, and fill space. That you had goals of being champion and the whole show being based around you, and you actually got that. a lot of people can dream it, but very few guys can make it come to realization. And you were able to do what you said. And I just, you know, I'm as happy for you as anybody that you know and anybody in wrestling.
Yeah, who would have thought this guy with a southern accent would be talking so much? But, you know, yeah, I mean, and it's pretty cool to be needed like that. You know, that you need to be on the majority of the show sometimes. You know, it's pretty cool to be able to say that, okay, all right, you're in not in just this segment, that segment, and you're in the last segment, by the way. I'm like, oh, my God, this is the whole show, you know. So it's cool, man. You got to be ready to step up, like you say, because, you know, you screw up, then you're not going to get that opportunity again, that's for sure.
You know, AJ, we talk about betting on yourself, and it looks good on paper, but I'm sure at the time it's nerve-wracking. And you're a family man, and when you're used to being a part of a company and then that changes for you and you do take a dive and you do take a chance, I mean, do you look back at that time? And I'm sure you're thankful for doing it, especially where you are right now. But I'm sure that was an extremely stressful time for you. And it was just a few years ago.
Yeah, well, I was scared, man. I mean, I didn't know what was going to happen. Nothing's promised. You know, I had no idea where this was going to lead. But I think at the time my ego was crushed, you know, because basically TNA had said, listen, you're really not worth the money that we're paid, you know, no matter how hard you work. So, yeah. And, you know, my ego took a blow there, and I had a chip on my shoulder. But it was still scary because if it were just me, this would have been easy. I probably have left TNA a long time ago. But I got four kids. Well, at the time, I had three kids that I had to support, and then my wife, and take care of. Like, that's scary, not knowing if you're going to be able to put food on the table.
But you know what, AJ? Like, you didn't look at that as being like, oh, woe is me. You're a man of character, and you looked at it like, I will show you. And I want people to realize that, you know, as God-fearing as you are, as respectable a man as you are, you also have a chip on your shoulder. That you're not a pushover. You're not somebody that you, you know, you can see it in your demeanor in the ring. When you decide to turn it on, you turn it on. And you were able to do that and become champion despite what other people thought of you. You proved those people wrong. It had to feel good.
Oh, yeah. Listen, it always feels good. But even though, you know, we're talking about, what, 2013 into 14, you know, going in there with a chip on your shoulder trying to put on great matches, then you get, you know, it never really stops. You know, I had to do the same thing once I got to WWE. I had to show these guys that I belong here and go in there with a chip on your shoulder, you know, and get after it. And then you'll still have matches where you go, okay, you know, they put me in a position that I don't know if they think this is going to be a good match, but well, we're going to show them, you know, stuff like that. So I think there's always moments of showing people that either you still got it or you can still do it, or it doesn't matter who you're in the ring with, but you can still have a great match with them.
Well, we looked at it like this, and you had Dave said that you're the wrestler of the decade, and that would be hard for me to argue and anybody else on this show. I'm sure that there are some people out there that feel differently, but if you feel differently, call in and give us your points, because that's what this show is about. It's not just about our opinions. It's about the nation and the fans. But I'm going to read through the people that you work with this year and in 19. Well, not this year, but last year. And from Daniel Bryan, top of the card, you took Mustafa Ali and brought him to the top of the card, a guy that hadn't been on television very much. Andrade, you had matches with Andrade that were pay-per-view worthy. Randy Orton, I'm not even going to even talk about the matches you had with Randy Orton. You and Elias were as entertaining as anything that was going on in wrestling at that time. Seth Rollins is the same category with Randy. It's not even worth having a conversation. We'll talk too long about it. You Ricochet, and I called Randy and I called you, and I said, please chop the shit out of him and wake him up. And you took Ricochet to heights that nobody else has been able to do. Cedric Alexander, the matches you had with Cedric Alexander, we had set, the match was so good, we called Cedric Alexander and had him on the show as a feature. You did that. Humberto Carrillo, unbelievable matches with this kid. He's a long way from being who you are. He's a long way from being an Eddie Guerrero or Rey Mysterio, but he's on the way. I can see the potential in him, but it would take for him to wrestle people like you every night to make him who they want him to be. Roderick Strong. I didn't respect Roderick Strong enough until the match I saw him have with you. Nakamura.
Oh, God.
And in the matches that you've had with Shinsuke are the ones that people are going to judge you by when your career is over. They're going to say, hey, all you got to do is watch the match that he had with Shinsuke Nakamura. And people will know everything they need to know about AJ Styles. And the matches you have with Rey Mysterio. Listen, I can say it with the same as Randy and Seth. The matches that y'all had were historically great matches that hold up in any era. And I guess I heard this, you know, Dave or Alex read this to me in the break before the show started, and they were saying that you took what Ric Flair and Buddy Rogers and people like that, and you made it better. Shawn Michaels. And Alex would be able to
yeah, that quote was actually from Paul Heyman, Mark.
Right. So it was Paul Heyman.
And which is a huge compliment.
A huge compliment. And it's hard to argue who AJ Styles is when you put all of that in people's face. And I know is you're humbled and you're honored and you're respectable, but you work for that. And you have to be goal-oriented, and I know that you don't want to be second fiddle because I heard you say it with your own mouth. I don't want to just go out there and have matches and be in the middle of the card. I want the show to be based around me, and you got your wish.
Yeah, let me ask you guys a question here. Is this decade, does that have to be consistent? You know, or can it be little plotches of, here's 3 years here, and, you know, or is it 6 years? I mean, at least I can say, 10 years straight through, never had time off. I've been working the whole time. I can't say that about the decade, that I've worked that whole time with no time off. I've never taken a year, never taken, you know, I think I may have gotten injured once or twice or something like that, but not much have I taken off in the past decade. So I wonder, does that come into play when you guys come in deciding who is, you know, the wrestler of the decade?
Well, yeah, when I put the list together, AJ, and you know, I looked at what...
And this is Dave's list.
Yeah, this is my list. I mean, I think, Mark, you agree with AJ, don't you?
Oh, I agree with it.
You're not just saying that because he's on the line, right?
I mean, I'm not saying that because you're a friend of mine.
Because I could have sworn you said something different yesterday, but okay.
Oh, stop it. I said that Brock Lesnar was the wrestler of the decade because even though he wasn't around wrestling the whole decade, which was one of the things that Dave actually brought to my attention, that it was hard. I had to go back and say, well, maybe not, because he didn't wrestle the whole decade. He was doing MMA. But when Brock was featured, he was the main event, that he was the standard. He was the – everybody revolved around him. He was the sun. And – but when the point comes, like you just said, the entire decade.
You have to look at it from start to finish, like AJ just said. It's undeniable. It's undeniable.
It's undeniable. I mean, the only other person that could, Randy Orton and Chris Jericho, there's probably about six or eight guys that are in that category, but none of them have your accolades, and none of them have improved with age except for you and Jericho. The other guys are still young, and I say young, they're not kids, but they're at more at the middle of their career than at the end. You said with your own mouth that you didn't want to wrestle for another 4 or 5 years, that you were trying to capitalize now because you didn't know how much you had left. I don't know if you still feel that way, but do you still feel that way? You feel like you're at the end?
I think I am. I mean, I really, like, you know, Marcus, you get older, you're like, where the freak did my energy go? Why don't I have that useless burst of energy that I had way back when? Like, you can see that starting to deplete. And, you know, and I've said this before, that I don't want to be that AJ Styles that would go, oh, well, I wish he could still do that. Or, oh, wow, he's just really slow. You know, I don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to be the AJ Styles that people remember and go out that way. You know, will I be like I was when I was 25? There's no way. It's just not possible.
As a friend of yours, brother, I will promise you. I promise you. I will tell you, hey, bro, you're starting to slip. You are not slipping at all yet. I can see you. I'm not going to punish you and try to force you to be out there. I'm just saying you still look damn good, and you're killing it. I just don't see the end. I don't see that slip yet.
And the crazy thing is, you know, I said I was going to be like 25. You know, I was going to have that energy boost, but then at the same time, I wouldn't want that because – You lose the hardest thing in wrestling when you're that young, right? And you got all this energy. The hardest thing in wrestling, more people knew this, how hard this was, is to sell, you know, whatever's going on, whether it be your knee, your arm, just the move, a body slam. If they knew how hard it was to remember what to sell and how long to sell it,
yeah,
and throughout the match and make everything look like a battle, you know, those guys. Like, for instance, I always like Jeff Hardy. When he sells, you're going, I think Jeff may really be hurt. You know, I love that because that's the hardest thing to do in pro wrestling. Moves are easy. They're not that hard. You know, but to remember what to do and how to sell it and the psychology that goes behind the sell is, when I see it, man, I mark out for that kind of stuff.
You know, AJ, when you look back at this last decade, is there a favorite memory? Is there a favorite match when you kind of look back at the last 10 years?
Well, I was
dancing in the ring with Mark Henry.
Yeah, that was up there. I think about moments. Now, I've realized that throughout my career. Now, it's not about the matches. It's about moments. You know, it's not about the promo. It's about the moments, and the moments that like John Cena, for instance, or him and I stood in the ring for 5 minutes and they were just going back and forth with fans. But, you know, John Cena, AJ Styles, like, to me, that was a really cool moment. The moment that Shinsuke Nakamura and I had at Money in the Bank, where we're staring at each other through a ladder. We move the ladder and then we go at each other, you know, like again, another moment with Shinsuke at Wrestle Kingdom. Like, it's all about the moments, you know. That's what
the
you
moment at the Garden with Steve Austin.
Yes. Like, those are incredible moments, and those are what people remember. People don't usually remember the matches, but they'll remember the moment. They remember that when Steve Austin had the beer truck and was shooting beer and shot beer into his own mouth, that blew his tonsils out. You know, they remember that stuff. And then when Kurt Angle did the same thing, but when you did it with milk, you know, that's what I remember. You know, so my job, or what I want to do, is I want to have moments. Let's see how many moments can I have, you know? That's what it's all about.
You know, we're talking a lot about Wrestle Kingdom today. Wrestle Kingdom's happening this weekend. You're a big part of Wrestle Kingdom. You're obviously, I know you're a dream of yours was to wrestle at Madison Square Garden. Now you've done that several times. It's like old hat to you now, wrestling at Madison Square Garden. You know, is there a favorite venue for you? You know, especially, you know, where you started from to where you are now. Is there a venue that you look back on that might be one of your favorites?
Well, I got to say, Corcoran Hall is always fun. You know, it's small. It's not a big venue, but there's something special about it. You know, and people expect that, especially when you, you know, a couple names come in there. They expect something special at Corcoran Hall. I always had fun when I went there. And again, I know it's a small venue, but I think that's what makes it so cool. I think that may be my favorite.
Are you sure you weren't the leader of the Bullet Club? Because I could have swore you were the leader of the Ring of Honor version of the Bullet Club.
Listen.
I mean, I know it's your career, and I'm just a fan, but, man, I could have sworn that you were the leader of the Bullet Club.
It just looked like he was the leader.
You perceived me as the leader because I had the mic in my hand.
Yeah.
That doesn't make me the leader. And you perceived me the leader because I had the championship around my waist. But if truth be told, I think the reason why that group of us, well, it was so fun because we were never really, I don't think we had someone says he's our leader. You know what I mean?
Okay. All right.
So like I always said in the promo, nobody believes it when I say it, but I said, we are the Bullet Club. We don't follow anyone. They follow us. You know, so, and it was us. I never wanted it to be a leader. I wanted it to be I wanted it to be this group. And that way, no one person would, you know, be the leader and stuff like that. That was always my thing. And you can look, I never called myself the leader of the Bullet Club.
Well, you know, I really have no life, AJ, so I'm going to go back and watch a lot of those matches back from 5 seconds.
Yeah, I got to go watch. I got to go back and watch. But I understand that.
Mark, that's the problem. I'm telling you, Dave, I wasn't the leader.
Okay, I believe you.
But the perception is reality. And you had the mic, and that's what the perception is that made Dave think that. It was just an assumption.
A lot of people say that. A lot of people, they list on Wikipedia, you know, who, you know, that wasn't my deal. That wasn't what I'd done. But I can only say that so many times people stop believing, even me. So,
and really quick, AJ, just to get away from, you know, obviously your decade and your career and, you know, the praise that Mark and I have been giving you for the last 20 minutes. I mean, when are people going to learn not to get married in a wrestling ring on TV? You would think that the history of pro wrestling, people would stop trying to get married on live
this
TV
is coming from
in a
wrestling
guy
that
ring.
Got married in a wrestling ring. No, listen, do not take Dave's advice right now. Like, we're going to act like this last 30 seconds didn't ever happen. It never happened. Boom! It's disappeared.
Listen, it's worked before, guys. People have actually gotten married before in the ring, okay? So it can happen, Dave.
AJ, I'm just judging from what I saw on Monday night. That was a hot mess. I mean, my God.
And
I loved it, though. I don't care.
Mark was a big fan.
It.
All you had to see on Twitter, he was belly laughing through the whole thing.
Well, let me just say this about the storyline. This is what you got to put to rest some things that some people have said online. Let me just say this. I think the story they were trying to tell is like basically Lana had said that Rusev was a sex maniac, right? And she kept on saying that and blah, blah, blah. Turns out the story was Lana was the one who was like that. Bobby, Liv, another dude that she got a divorce because she cheated on this dude with, you know, Rusev. Like, so it turns out Lana was the sex fiend, if you will. And I think that was the story that they were trying to tell. You know, there were some things said that I saw online. I was just like, come on, here's the story, which I thought was pretty obvious, but I guess it isn't. So I'm just clearing that up for you.
Well, AJ, I think one thing that, I always say this show started just over 10 years ago. And by the way, AJ, thank you for all the time that you've given this show throughout the years, you know, whether it was TNA, Ring of Honor, New Japan, and now with the WWE, you've always given this show time. So I truly appreciate that. But the one biggest adjustment that I've had to make as a 48-year-old man is social media and Twitter. I mean, I think at some point you have to come to the realization that it's the vocal minority. It's not everybody's opinion what you see online. That's probably the hardest thing you have to wrestle with when it comes to social media.
Oh, it's terrible. I honestly wish social media didn't exist. And this is arguments that I have with my own wife about things that it's like, listen, if some crazy stuff happened, it probably happened where we were kids. It's just we didn't know about it. But now, you know, everything about anything that goes on because of social media, it's terrible. I wish we didn't have it, guys. I really do.
Well, the last question for me, and again, it's been great talking to you, AJ. What's next?
You know, sometimes you don't know what's next until it's right in front of your face. Mm. And that's exciting for me, that the possibility of something else could happen, and you're hoping it will, but you just don't know. And sometimes you don't know what that goal is until it's like, oh, man, what if I can do this? Like, it just kind of hits you like a light bulb. Is there something going on right now, that a certain goal that I've got in mind? I don't know. I don't really think so. I haven't found it yet, it'll pop up. It always does. I always try to find something to help me get better, help me strive at, to become something better, something memorable. So it'll come. It's only been a couple of days. So,
yeah, it's we're 2 years into the new year. So go ahead, Mark.
Well, AJ, on my side, I know that I've probably not been as good a friend as I could have been. There are cities that you've gone to that had great soul food spots, and I did not call you and say, hey, man, don't forget, you're in Louisville, go to Big Mama's. Next time you're in New York, go to Sylvia's. Just give you the food list.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start calling you and on the cities that we used to frequent to make sure you go hit those spots. And I'm going to see if your abs go away.
What a
man.
Good friend.
Yeah, they're struggling right now, so... Yeah, you got to hit me up. Hit me with those. That was the best thing about you when you and I used to travel together. I know I'm going to eat well today. So,
well, AJ, thanks so much for the time, and thank you for the decade. Like I said, former IWGP champion, TNA World champion, WWE champion. Oh yeah, leader of the Bullet Club, AJ Styles.
The son of a gun.
AJ, thank you so much for the time, my friend. I appreciate it.
All right, guys, take care.
All right, man.
Mark, awesome. Always awesome talking to AJ Styles. And again, you forget this show's been on the air for over 10 years, and we've kind of seen his evolution. He was a huge star with TNA. He was a champion.
Yeah.
And then what he did, taking a bet on himself, and then, the transition to Ring of Honor, the transition to New Japan, and then getting to the WWE, not having to go, through like what a lot of people from other companies have to go through. I mean, boom, he made that debut on the main roster, and right away he was a main event superstar. One hell of a career for AJ Styles. And the biggest part of it, Mark, it's not over yet. I'm sure,
not even close. And this AJ Styles is a living, breathing example of all of these guys that are not 6'5" and 270 pounds. He is the living example that you can do it if you have great psychology, great work rate, and that you make people care about what you're doing and have passion and think about, how am I going to create a moment? And he talked about that. How am I going to create a moment that's going to make people give a damn about me being on screen? All you smaller guys, stop complaining and look at AJ Styles as the template and get to work.
Yeah, I mean, congratulations to him. Whether you have him as your wrestler of the decade, whether you have him in your top 10, one thing we do know, he is, when it's all said and done, he's a legend. He's a future Hall of Famer. And
without
a
doubt.
And you know what? I always say this. I said this when Daniel Bryan came back. You don't know how long you're going to have AJ Styles in the ring. So let's cherish and appreciate every single time we see him in the ring. And listen, we watch Raw and we watch SmackDown. We bitch and complain about things we don't like. But, man, when you see somebody like AJ Styles in the ring, what we saw with AJ and Randy Orton on Monday on Raw, Mark, as a fan, you have to appreciate those moments.
You have to, because, you know, you look at what he said. He's tired. And I understand what he's saying. I remember feeling that way. And he said he never wants to go out there and not be the guy that he is now. Does it sound familiar?
Yep.
It's the reason that I quit, is because I can start to see it myself. And before other people saw it, I quit. I did not want to show a bad product or representation of myself. I would have felt like I was disrespecting the game. I was stealing money. I used to bitch and complain about people that came to the shows, and they'd be like, man, I'm a little drunk, or I'm a little beat up. Take it easy on me out there today. You know I'm old. And I used to hear that, and I said I would never be that guy. And I meant it. I never stole money. Anybody that's, well, them first 3 years, I might need to give some money back. But after that, brother, I had a passion for not being that guy.
That's right, man. You're a Hall of Famer.
And I bust my ass. And I work for a big guy. You start talking about work rate, I got it in. And I'm proud of what I did. And AJ is the same way. He is an honorable man. I've prayed with this dude. Like, he is a God-fearing dude. He respects the game as much as he respects himself. And before he goes out there and is less than who he is right now, he'll give it up. So you better appreciate him now.
If you don't know SiriusXM, then listen up. Commercial-free music, plus sports, comedy, talk, and news. They have it all. A lot of people think you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. You can listen outside the car. Right now, you can get your first 3 months of SiriusXM outside the car for just $1. Just go to SiriusXM.com/busted to see offer details and to subscribe. You can listen on your phone, at home, and online. That's SiriusXM.com/busted. Offer available to new SiriusXM streaming subscribers. SiriusXM, no car required.
We do a lot of reflection this time of year, but now that we're the 3rd of January, it's time to look ahead. So when you look ahead, Mark, at 2020, and you see the growth of a lot of organizations and a lot of wrestlers, my pick for 2019 Wrestler of the Year was Becky Lynch. When you look at the championships, when you look at the popularity, is there someone that you look at that you think could possibly be an early pick for Wrestler of the Year for 2020? Or is there somebody that you're looking at saying, hey, I think it's time that they're going to make a jump, that we're going to have that discussion when it's all said and done in December of 2020?
You know what? I think this is going to be the year of Kevin Owens. Kevin is so good, and he's compelling. His body is looking better. There's nothing getting in the way of Kevin being the guy in wrestling except for booking.
Mm-hmm.
You could put The Fiend up there. You could put Daniel Bryan up there. I see a lot in. I wanted, and this is more of a want than what I actually think will happen, but I would love to see Braun Strowman get a really good 6-8 months that would lead him into WrestleMania, that would lead him after WrestleMania. We need to do more with that guy.
And there was a time not that long ago that I was saying, when it came to Braun Strowman, put a championship strap around his waist. A lot of people say give it time, but you know what? Now the moment's passed. A lot of times you got to strike while the iron's hot in pro wrestling, and I'm hoping that he has that opportunity. I'm going to throw out three names, Mark, and I want to kind of get your take on it, because there's three wrestlers that I'm looking at that I think could possibly dominate 2020. When I look at AEW, and obviously Chris Jericho's the champion, Cody Rhodes, we all know what Cody's done, and Jon Moxley has been phenomenal. I think probably the best heel, the two best heels in pro wrestling to me are Baron Corbin and MJF. When I look at MJF, I look at MJF as he's the best heel in AEW. And when I look at 2020, I think he's a guy that could be holding a championship title. I think he's a guy that could be that heel that you'll pay to see get beat. I think he could be a Ric Flair type champion in the fact that you'll pay to hopefully see him lose that championship to the top babyface. I love MJF. I love him in the ring. I love him on the mic. He's super young, and I think he could be a heel champion, like I said, that people will pay a ticket to see get beat.
You know what? I definitely can see that. He's going to, and this is just my opinion, I think that he's going to have to see himself as the guy and not just worry about the booking. There's something about the confidence level of a talent saying, I am the guy. The me getting the title is important, but it's not important right now because it's something that I'm striving for, but it's only something that's going to happen. I will be champion. You have to portray yourself as the champion without the title. And if MJF can do that, I could see him being that guy.
And you look at, he's only 23 years old.
Yeah.
He is super young, MJF. And that, I mean, here's a guy that's probably going to be doing it for at least another 20 years. Think about that. We're going to have to put up with this son of a bitch for another 20. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I don't know how I'm going to do it.
Dave, I was telling my wife.
Piece of garbage. Human filth, the guy.
It's hard for me to see him as this bad human being after seeing the video of him on Rosie O'Donnell's show as a little kid.
He changed. He's changed. Now, if you want to call
it. He's a demon spawn
now. If you want to call it bad parenting, if you want to call it the fact that I look at MJF, and I mean this, I've dealt with MJF. You know, forget about like on the show. I get it. He's on as a guest and he throws a bunch of like insults at me. And, you know, probably people think once the microphone's off and the show is over that, you know, he's probably giving me high fives and patting me on the back. Guy's an asshole 24/7. I mean, the stuff that he says on the mic to me is the same things that he says to me when the microphone's off. Just a bad human being. And as a matter of fact, I've met MJF's father. MJF's dad's a really nice guy. I don't know where he gets it from. Maybe it's a sense of entitlement. Maybe it's too much success too soon because being a 23-year-old and, you know, being one of the top heels in
pro
wrestling.
So why did you and
Alex
stop me from wanting to take his life the last time he tried to – last time he was in the studio and he talked real tough to you? I told you. I said, Dave, you want me to come in the studio? And he said, no. I mean,
because it's not worth it. It's not worth it, Mark. I mean, first of all, is it worth you losing your job or, God forbid, getting arrested over somebody like that, a human stain like MJF? No. The answer is no. I would never let you do that. Listen,
same thing with Sammy Callahan. You told me don't worry about it.
Well, Sammy Callahan's a different story. But, like, the stuff that comes out of MJF's mouth, I heard it from my first wife, my second. I'm used to that abuse. Verbal abuse I could take, Mark. I can take that. Another two names I'm going to throw out at you. The first name people are going to say, well, look at the success he's already had. And that's Adam Cole. Like an Adam Cole, you know, he won NXT Wrestler of the Year, and he's getting a lot of accolades within NXT. But Adam Cole, I think, is somebody who can main event a WrestleMania. Adam Cole is somebody who could be at the top of the card. And I know NXT is that third brand, and it's a brand. It's not a developmental territory anymore. But Adam Cole's main evented takeovers. I hope one day Adam Cole's main eventing a WrestleMania.
Wow, that's pretty good. But the two that I'm going to throw out at you now, I think that you'll agree with. I really think that Shayna Baszler is going to turn the corner and be able to do something in women's wrestling this year that is going to be remnants of or remind us of Ronda Rousey, is going to remind us of Becky Lynch. And right there at her heels is going to be Rhea Ripley.
Yes. Good call.
This year, those two women are going to be right up there with Kevin Owens to me as people that could potentially take over the business.
Wow.
And, I really can foresee that happening. They have the ability. They're well-liked. They look great. And they work. Their work rate is, you know, without peer. So those are my three.
Can I throw one more out there?
Throw it.
Big E. Yep. How about Big E as a world heavyweight champion? Not a tag team champion, a world heavyweight champion.
There's only one way that that's going to happen. Are you sensing that he is going to join the dark side of the force?
It's possible, but you could the New Day could be like a four horsemen. Each member holds a championship title. We saw it with tag team titles, and when Kofi Kingston was WWE champion. Why not? If you see him with Kofi holding that championship over his head, I mean, I think Big E, if they made him just, hey, we're going to get behind him as a singles wrestler, I could see him as a world heavyweight champion.
The only way that I could see it is if Xavier Woods comes back and they're all rolling, getting back together, and then Big E just beats the shit out of him, puts him right back on the shelf and tells Kofi how much he hated seeing him hold that title and act like he was better than him. And now he's going to show him and join and become a heel. And he'll have at least two or three people that I can look at and go, yeah, I can see him having a great program as a heel with those baby faces.
Thanks for listening. Catch us Monday through Saturday on Busted Open from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM. Fight Nation, Channel 156. The Busted Open Podcast.